Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank, and Joan Adams and I host this show. Sheila Odette joins us this evening, our show's astrologer and friend, and we will discuss the astrological chart of Nikita Khrushchev and JFK, and look at how these two men averted a nuclear catastrophe in the early 1960s. We also discussed this at length with James Douglas on last week's show. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, Joan.
I'm waiting for you to say hello to that right now. Hello. I decided I'm not going to speak exactly when you do anymore.
Well, I decided to bring you on, bring you on so that I wouldn't have to search for the bringing you on button, so that it would just be a little bit better timed. And hello, Sheila.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, Sheila. It's always fun to have you on here.
Yes, it's fun to hear your voice, too.
Oh, it's great to hear you.
You're going to get me in between Kennedy and Khrushchev. This is really interesting, Kate.
Oh, I think so.
Did you know? Yeah, I was in the meeting, right?
You were the fly on the wall.
Yeah, well, you know, what an astrological chart really explains in some way is source energy. It doesn't explain character, or it's just kind of a picture. I think why I love astrology so much is it is about source energy. It, we all are a spinning wheel of source, and, you know, it's a vortex of energy and love, and that's where we all come from, and then we are born onto this planet, which is, into a lot of, we come on this journey for a lot of experience, and that experience is the journey. And when you see a lot of charts like, Kennedy and Khrushchev and Ted Kennedy and the Kennedys and all, it just means that they constantly, you know, when you're outside the vortex, you're constantly in contrast to the vortex energy. And what astrology does, no matter if you're outside the vortex and you are, you'll go so far as saying, you know, in any kind of dis-ease or even criminal energy, it means that those people still are shooting off rockets of desire in some way in defining their own loving source. And if you read a lot of biographies of criminals and stuff, you see that they do, in some way, a lot of them have gone through really terrible experiences in childhood, and that they will have explanations for the pain and agony, but it doesn't still mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff that when you go back, and a lot of religion and all politics and all kinds of political stuff is outside the vortex, because it's always about explaining, and it's always about attack and defend, and it's always about you're right, no, I'm right, this is black, this is white. So the only way that you can ever solve anything is inside the vortex. The only way you can ever get to something is by conversation. And that's where I think that Khrushchev and Kennedy came together, because John Kennedy was a Gemini. He was a Gemini, and Geminis are really throw you off balance. And this is a double mutable sign. I mean, Sun in Gemini, Moon in Virgo. So, of course, he was very ill as a child, so he was put to bed, but in bed he read a lot of books and he did a lot of his own research. In other words, you know, it's supposed to be in Ted Kennedy's book, it is, you know, he was not grooming the oldest son to be president. Ted Kennedy said that was not true in his book. He said that that became kind of a myth that he was grooming the oldest son to be president of the United States. And if anybody wants to read Ted Kennedy's book, it is one of the most wonderful books I have ever read in my life. It's not, it's just like, it's like reading a novel. It's just fun, and it's just, it, there, you know, just a lot of great stuff is in that book. So I gave the book for somebody's birthday, and then they didn't take it with them, and I was glad, so then they didn't get it for a long time. They got it at Christmas because I read it. And I gave it to him and said, this is the gift that keeps on giving, you know? So anyway, the Gemini finds, because he was bedridden and because a lot of the stuff that went on in his childhood, in many ways he found a different way to communicate. He was, in many ways, and I'm saying that in his chart, he has the Sun in the eighth house and Venus in Gemini. He was a lover of information. Kennedy just loved information. Now you have Khrushchev. By excitation, he has Jupiter, Pluto, and Neptune all in Gemini. So he and I have Jupiter in Gemini, so I know what that is like. It is wanting to know everything, wanting to get more curious and more curious. So these two men would really have that element of connecting with each other. In many ways, when Kennedy was 23 years old, then his son, by progression, went into Cancer. And, you know, if, you know, 53, it would have went into Leo, of course. But you know, the Cancer thing, the whole Cancer progression lined him up in some ways with the United States of America's chart, that he was the source energy had aligned him to be president of the United States. And there was a lot of, you know, tragedy around that. I mean, the older brother died, you know, the sister died. The Kennedy family, all, you know, the wonderful thing I thought about Rose Kennedy, which was the matriarch of the family, she was one of the people that I most admire for keeping her source energy alive. And yes, she was very religious and she was into the church, but she always was shooting out rockets of desire toward hope and toward, you know, and believing that this by the grace of God or the grace of the energy of the source, all of this was the way it was supposed to be. And she really held that family together in a major kind of way. And I sometimes don't think she gets enough credit for that. And when you have, he had the moon in Virgo, and the moon in Virgo is, again, if I want to say the way I look at a chart, the sun, the symbol of the sun is made in a chart with a red circle with a dot in the center of the circle. And that is the vortex energy. That is the source energy. It's just one little dot in the middle of that red circle. And in order to get to that, you have to water it, nurture it, continue to be curious, continue to be searching, continue to be shooting toward that all the time. Then what happens is the middle of the chart where all of the squares and trines and all of these things that are going in the center of the chart, when you follow different journeys, then it explodes out and you open up that seed. Now, the moon in the chart is half of the sun. It's a half circle. And the moon really to me is everybody that you put around you to help open that seed, whether they are positive or negative, because the negative people will help you shoot the rockets of desire towards your source. The positive people a lot of times just say you're wonderful, okay? You're just all wonderful and good. So a lot of times, you know, if the show is great, you don't have to fix anything. In my life, you know, when I was in show business, I was so afraid to get a bad review, and then I got one, and I said, that was wonderful, because basically, then you have something to fix. Then you have something to work on. But if you get all rave reviews, you go, oh, that's wonderful. I don't have to work on anything.
Right.
But Kennedy had the moon in Virgo, which I look at, it looks like an M with a glyph turned in, and the one line is mental, physical, emotional, and the line that turns in is spiritual. And that means basically Virgos get a lot of criticism about being critical. Great sentence. A lot of criticism about being critical. The reason that they are critical is because they're most critical on self, and therefore they project out. They project it out onto other people because they can't stand the criticism, you know. That's why if you get a Virgo client, you go, you know, what you think of me is none of my business, you know. because they'll constantly, but that is just their means of getting information, their means. And if you can stay in it, if you can stay in that criticism with them, you will come out at a better place. You will come out at a better place because it's a way to sift information. Kennedy had Mars, Mercury, and Jupiter in Taurus, which meant basically also in the Hayes house, which means this man was stubborn. No matter what, he was stubborn. He got through the illness. He got through all this stuff. He got through everybody thinking he was just the wise ass of the family. He got through all that, and he emerged, and he became president of the United States. I call that stubbornness. That means somewhere in my soul I know what I'm supposed to do, and somewhere in my soul I'm going to get there. And he did it. I find in a lot of these charts with leaders and people that have really used their vortex, there's quintiles in the chart. Have you heard of quintiles, Kate?
Yes, but explain it.
Well, it's a 72-degree aspect, and it means a hidden talent. It means there's a talent there that nobody really sees up front or out front. In other words, it's hidden. And Kennedy had one to Neptune and Saturn, and he had a quintile to this Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, and Taurus thing. So the Neptune and Saturn. Interesting, Saturn in his chart is in Cancer. And eventually he did get killed by the presidency and, you know, being the president of the United States and all that stuff. But Neptune, he switched signs with Neptune, and it's in Leo. And there's a quintile to that from Jupiter, Mercury, Mars. That means working behind the scenes. That means what we saw going on. There was a lot more going on behind the scenes than the public ever knew.
And
you know,
his own presidency, hardly anybody knew. It was a secret correspondence and communication between these two guys that nobody knew about, and not even the Russian government. Certainly, Kennedy's generals would have really been pissed off.
And it was about the ocean.
Yeah.
And Kennedy has Cancer on the midheaven. It was about the ocean and Saturn in Cancer, you know. I find fascinating the fact that they came together over the ocean, and the ocean, of course, is the biggest part of the Earth, and what is going on now is in the ocean, you know, the spill in the ocean.
Sure.
The ocean is, you know, what really gets me is about the spill in the ocean is the fact that, you know, sometimes in the trillions of years that the Earth's been there, there's been oil spills. Okay.
Sure.
And and somehow we don't give the Earth enough credit to know how to heal themselves, or the ecological system, or the fish, or anything. I think the Earth is a lot smarter than we give it credit for. And to predict a pessimistic outcome constantly here is not really helping anybody.
It's not even true.
It's not true. But, you know, instead I think there should be a focus of energy. It doesn't matter if there's just, you know, 5 or 10 people focusing on the healing, which I think there are all over the planet, you know, focusing on the healing of it. That's enough. That's enough, because if you think 5 or 10 or 100 people, if they're all sending their rockets of desire into their vortexes of that they want to heal, that is a lot of energy. That's more energy than we even understand or realize.
Yeah.
That's why when people come together, you know, I was watching the World Cup, and I was like watching those people in Spain and the Netherlands, hordes and hordes of people, you know, and I was going, oh my gosh, what energy, what energy was going on there, and that, you know, all these countries came together in South Africa. It was much bigger than the games.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge thing, you know. I forget who told the story. Maybe you know, Kate, about where they started the Olympics in one of the concentration camps. Who was that did that?
Oh, my gosh, I don't know. That's interesting.
I don't know either.
It was the Olympics in the concentration camps, and you know, I can't think of the name. I'll think of it when I get off the – I can see the book, and I can see, but I can't get the name. He went to the guards and said, why not for 2 weeks we just run the Olympics here in the concentration camp?
Mm-hmm.
And the guards agreed to it. And they had all kinds of things around races and all kinds of – somebody, maybe one of the radio listeners has read that. It was a documentary on television too.
Not Frankel. Not Frankel.
I don't know if it was Viktor Frankl. I was thinking that too. Viktor Frankl's the one that saw the flower coming out, you know, from the boards.
Right.
And
yeah.
said, I will survive. I will survive this. And he did. And he said anybody, you know, when he saw them going down in their emotionalness, he knew that they were not going to live through it. I don't think it was Viktor Frankl, but it could be. But I don't think – anyway, through this, the guards and everybody, there became a mutual respect for everybody in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting thing that happened in that camp. And so that just proves to me that if everybody starts doing something in the vortex of love and not outside the vortex, then things can be healed no matter how tragic they are or disastrous. Khrushchev was an Aries. The thing about Khrushchev is he also had a quintal. He had a quintal to his sun and Mars in Aquarius. He was a guy that nobody had their finger on. He was a guy that they had put in one slot and he jumped out of it into another one. Not exactly good, you know, for the Russian thing. So, but he had a void, what we call a void of course sun. There's 30 degrees in a sign. And you can be born at zero, and then by progression, or the sun moves and progresses a year at a time. So Kennedy was born at 7. So when he was 23 years old, his sun went into Cancer by progression. But Gorbachev's Aries was at 27 degrees of Aries, which means that he came in with a void of course sun, which means not only is his seed inside of him in Aries, which is pioneering, but it's also way out there. It's way out there, like at 27, way out there. So he has within him the capabilities of breaking something open and pioneering something that nobody else has done. Now, when he was 3 years old, his son changed signs. That's very early, and it went into Gemini. So now we're asking where the two men were connected, okay? So for the next 33 years, till he was 33, his son was in Gemini. So he understood Kennedy. He got it. He got he got about communication. He got all of that stuff about being able to talk in conversation. And the only thing that can ever be done is by communication. And the only way that people can have communication is by being inside the vortex. You cannot, because of the range of vibrational energy. And when I'm talking about a rocket of desire, I'm talking about vibration. It's how we vibrate. And I'm telling you, when somebody comes, when somebody sings a song or somebody does something or somebody does something great, our hearts open. And, you know, my grandson is here for a week, and it was interesting because he was downstairs, and he turned the television on, and E.T. was on.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't move. It was amazing to me, the heart center of that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it was just, and then when the scientific guys came in and were completely outside the vortex of the heart and started saying, oh, we have to test him and we have to do this and we have to do that and we have to. But in the end, love won out because those kids got him back. They got him back to home, where he wanted to go. And when he put his little finger up and lit it up and put it on the little boy's brain and said, I will always be in there. I thought that was, and nobody knows how to make those kind of pictures like Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I mean, he just has that touch. The music, the lighting, the whole thing. And, the other one that really knew how to do that, is George Lucas,
Mm-hmm.
And, Lucas has all kind of quintals, and so does Spielberg. They have this whole this dedication to a quest of loving energy and getting everybody to open their heart. So, what particularly Khrushchev's moon? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Sure.
Khrushchev's moon is in Virgo.
Aha.
So we have combustible moons. We have moons on top of each other. These men have a lot of stuff to talk about, okay? Mentally, physically, and, of course, emotionally and spiritually, the ocean brought them together.
Well, they wrote these 20-page poetic letters to each other.
Sure.
And I just wanted to quickly say that what strikes me about Kennedy is that he had no fear of death. Well, when you don't have any fear of death, you don't have any fear of anything.
No.
Because that's the ultimate fear that people have, is of death. He didn't have it. So everybody else might have been trembling around the fact that this man was assassinated, but I don't think it really was a big deal to him at all.
Assassination means you just step over.
Yeah.
Assassination means, you're here and then you're there, and then you join the group. It's us that have a fear around death. It's the whole thing around suicide, too. If their rockets of desire put them into that mode where they want to commit suicide, we may mourn and grieve and say that was awful. But unlike the Catholic religion, I believe that they step right back into the vortex. I'm not telling people to commit suicide. I'm just saying it's one way to do it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if you don't want to commit suicide, you're not going to do it. But I think we've been a little harsh on that act. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Everything around judgment of all things is, it's just your opinion. It's your perception of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for us to blame the person that's in the center of the whole thing, saying you should do this and you should do that. Not for 5 minutes do I want to be president of the United States of America. Who would want it?
Right.
I mean, right. It's just, I guess these men run for it and I guess they really want it. But when they're up there and everything, I go, do you know what you're getting into?
Oh, I know.
Because it's just, I mean, to hold yourself high with your chin held high in the midst of all of the stuff that's coming at you, right?
Yeah.
For any country, it must be extremely, extremely difficult. I mean, difficult is not the word. It's horrendous, okay? And I mean, Khrushchev was called, you know, a drunk. I mean, Khrushchev really got some, I mean, a bad, bad press, you know?
I really believe that after Kennedy's death, they did a lot of character assassination because it could very well be that half the stuff they said about Kennedy wasn't true. You know, all those, that womenizing and all that, I actually believe it wasn't true.
I actually don't care, Kate.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about that. I don't care about what Clinton did. I don't care about any of the sexual stuff. Enjoy yourself and run the country, okay? I'm sorry.
Wait. That's not my point. My point is that it was character assassination.
Yes, on some people's part that chose that kind of judgment.
Yeah.
That shows that perception of reality of you know, this is what we're going to pick out of all the wonderful things that everybody that has been done. This is what, I mean, if you mention Clinton's name, it's the first thing, you know, that's brought up, not all of the stuff that he's doing now and that he's over in Haiti right now, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So,
it's always a matter of forgiveness. Once again, nobody can forgive things that perhaps they themselves are doing too. I mean, you know, really. So.
Well, you know, the worst. I'm sorry, Joan. Do you want to say something?
No, I'm just listening to you, Sheila. I love everything. I just listen to you. You fascinate me.
Well, you know, the lowest vibration on the scale, and if I'm working with clients or anybody, the lowest vibration on the scale, and I guess you would both agree, is apathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apathy is that there is no vibration around the person at all. And if you get somebody that is in the midst of grief, it's like I was at this funeral a couple months ago, and the mother was just in apathy, very young woman, very beautiful woman. She just a saint, right? But her mother was just sitting there in apathy. And the ex-husband all of a sudden stood up in the back of the church and said something. And I saw her go crazy. And I said, oh, my God, anger is better than apathy.
Right.
Because there is more vibration around anger. There's actually more vibration around revenge. At least there's a vibration going on. At least, you know, the whole thing of the map of consciousness means, okay, you're no more vibrating at 20. You're vibrating now at 50. Fear, you know, when you get fearful of something, it's even more. It's like 100. It's like, you know, you're watching. The thing about what happens with anger and when you get up to pride, and that's a lot of stuff with addiction. If you talk to a lot of people that have addiction as their disease, they're very prideful. They're very prideful, which knocks them right back down after they use into apathy. So that what they're doing is they're circling from shame to guilt to, you know, that comes with an apathy and grief and fear, and then they get this desire to use, and then they get rageful, and then they're prideful, and then they circle right back down again.
Okay,
so
anytime you see somebody who is apathetic, who's
mm-hmm.
totally apathetic,
yes,
and that's a mental health alert. You know,
uh-huh.
Anytime you don't get a result, an emotion out of somebody, and especially when there should be, like
yes.
funeral or whatever, then it's just a danger sign. To me, I mean, I just read that as
trouble's
on the way.
It could be that somebody is totally on some sort of drug anyway. I mean, a lot of times drugs just wipe out anything at all.
Right.
Well, it always gets
until
me
it's over.
When somebody's sitting in court or, you know, they get a child, that one teenager who said he didn't do it, who was standing there in the midst of this, and they go into that. They say there's no emotion. Well, there isn't any. The kid or whoever went numb.
Yeah.
I mean, and in trial, well, she didn't cry. She didn't do that. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. And I go, they're like you just said, Joan, they're in the biggest form of depression.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They have gone numb.
Right.
Well, let's face it, though, too. The doctors will prescribe heavy-duty drugs to people who have lost somebody very, you know, somebody they love, so that they are numbed out, so that if you, you know, to try to talk to them, they're probably not home.
No, they probably are not home.
But then in the next week or so, that there's a crash coming.
Yeah.
Yes, Joan, there's a crash coming.
Yeah.
Unresolved grief. Unresolved grief.
Right. I mean, you have to feel that stuff. You have to walk through it. You just have to walk through it.
Kind of like a birthing process.
You're going to eventually.
that whole thing of you can't go around it, you have to go through it, is very true,
right.
Joan.
Right.
You know,
it might not be this week, but eventually you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And anybody, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, it's not what you achieve, it's what you overcome. That's what I was saying about Rose Kennedy. When you think of what she had to overcome, when you think about all those children that died.
I know,
I mean,
that's so hard.
And you wonder how she stood.
And she did.
You know, and she did. Yeah.
She did because of her soul, because of her energy, because of her belief, because I think that she grieved, and I think she went into certainly apathetic and depressive moments, but I think her faith, if we would just want to say faith, because that's what she had, somehow her whole contrast, she could stay inside the vortex.
Mm-hmm.
She could stay inside, because I don't think any kind of addiction or anything can be solved outside the vortex. I mean, I think addiction, punishment, and the other thing about addiction for me is that people don't look at the enabler as just as bad as the addict. I mean, they're in the disease just as much. And they have a tendency to say, okay, this person, is the poor enabler, the poor person that, you know. But they're in the disease.
Yeah.
They're in the disease just as much as the person that is addicted. And they get really, the addict gets all the bad press, which keeps them in shame and guilt and blame, you know. It's interesting because the face of addiction, you know, right now is Lindsay Lohan. So I decided to do Lindsay Lohan's chart, and she has a beautiful chart.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Joan, what planet are you on?
What are you saying? Who are you saying?
Lindsay Lohan, the actress, is on, you know, that's even on the news now, that they're putting Lindsay Lohan, this actress, into jail for 90 days, seeing, and what kind of a message is that? What does jail do?
Well, yeah, it doesn't do anything.
It's just a form of punishment outside the vortex.
It's amazing that people survive that, really.
Huh?
It's amazing that people actually live through it or actually survive it. I bet a lot of people don't. I bet there's a high form of cancer, and we know there's a lot of suicide that's covered up, and then there's a lot of heart disease. People probably fall over from strokes.
Well, I had a client this week, and I'm not going to, that really works with, you know, it's, you know, the whole Kennett Square group, you know, but this other woman had her put in jail this weekend over 4th of July. And what you're saying, Kate, is this, it was such a great gift in some way because this woman had no idea what jail was.
Well, yeah.
And she was like, she said they take you from cage to cage, they walk you around, and she hadn't been proven guilty here. You know what I mean? And she was walking around in circles. She said, I couldn't sit down. And she said, this was in Philadelphia. And she said, then in Philadelphia, they put you out in the street in the prison suit with no money or anything. And she said, and then if you have no way to contact anybody, what do you do? So it was really interesting. So she was saying, oh, my God, what about these women? And that's the kind of person this person is. What about these women? She said, I had sources. I had resources. But what about these women that don't have any resources? They just are put out, and they just go right back into where they were, and there's no halfway houses. There's no anything. And then they go, oh, my God, they relapsed. Well, of course they relapsed. So it's...
Who wouldn't, right?
What?
Who wouldn't relapse?
Well, this woman that had been in, she was on the evening news. She'd been in 6 times. And, man, I wish I remembered her name. But the 6th time she said, I'm doing something about this. And she started a small halfway house. I don't know how she did it in the beginning, but she has over 100, more than 100 women in it now, that she goes right to the jail where they come out, and she picks them up and takes them there.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. That's a beautiful story.
Feeds them and clothes them and gives them shelter, and they can stay there as long as they want.
Wow.
So this woman, you know, there are these wonderful people like are catalysts in people's lives. And, you know, I looked at Lindsay Lohan's chart, and she's a Cancer. And honest to God, I expected, you know, you're so pessimistic, and you pick up a chart, and you say it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And there's double yods in this chart, double fingers of God. I don't know. This, you know, you look at it, and you go, this person is here to teach us something about addiction.
Sure.
And you know, if she's chosen that, you know, you go, whoa, it's very interesting because, like I said before, who would choose that disease? I mean, who would choose it, you know?
Oh, I know.
I mean, you're completely isolated and, you know, it destroys careers, it destroys your whole life, your parents and family, and there's, you know, there's absolutely no cure unless you want to do it.
I think another face of addiction is Mel Gibson right now. If the way he is acting is because of the alcohol. He is a total alcoholic who is, you know, unrepentant. He refuses to get sober or do anything.
Okay, so that's the chart that I have under Lindsay Lohan. You want to hear that?
We're going all over the place, aren't we?
Jupiter and Gemini, that's the story of my life.
You have to know that
this man has made the movie Passions of Christ. This man did Braveheart. This man did, you know, these movies. He's a Capricorn. Would you believe that?
Oh, no, I wouldn't, really.
He's a Capricorn with the moon in Libra, you know.
Uh-huh.
The moon in Libra. The one thing that jumps out off the chart, I always see one thing that jumps out, is this Mars, Saturn, and Scorpio. This whole thing around the father. There, you know... I'm at a firm belief that, you know, you don't have to go to a shrink's office and go back over what happened to you when you were 5, okay, or 10 or 12. You will have it right there in the moment. It's coming out somewhere. Now, that this is coming out in Mel Gibson right here. Now, what I heard on the phone when I heard his phone call, Joan, are you with us here?
I'm listening.
Did you hear the phone call, Joan? No.
No.
I love you. Well, on the phone call, he was very derogatory, Joan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, of course, terrible things. And, of course, Kate, I'm assuming he was drinking, okay?
Yeah, I think so.
And he got into his whole actor thing, breathing hard and using the whole actor tones of where you talk low and then scream, you know. And I was listening to it very carefully, and I thought underneath this is a man that's really in love. This is a man that's in love and is really pissed off and just can't handle it, being rejected. That's what I heard. Because in the middle of the rant that they don't really bring up, he said, this is your last chance to come back.
And who would ever want to go back to that?
Well, that's right, but then you're talking about the disease talking, okay?
Yeah.
You're talking about, and then, you know, Joanne said very softly, I wonder what his wife put up with for 27 years. I just heard that very softly in the room. He's married to the other woman for 27 years.
Oh, I know.
But he has the moon in Libra, which is a beautiful moon. And he has the sun in Capricorn, which are some of the most talented people on Earth, Capricorns. He really can go into the ancient brain and pick out movies and know exactly how to make them. He has a great gift for that. And I have no idea when he said that whole thing about the N-word, about a pack of, you know, he worked with Danny Glover on how many movies? I have no idea what Danny Glover is going, oh, my God, you know?
Well, Whoopi Goldberg said today that he is not a racist, or said it the other day. But the thing is he's been in her home. He's been very gracious. He's been very loving to her children.
Sure.
And that he's a schizophrenic. You know, alcohol does that to people. People, often there's a person who drinks and who are the most gentle, beautiful people in the world, but when they drink, they become absolutely intolerable. And he has to be one of them. I don't know. I don't know Mel Gibson, but I'm just guessing.
Well, you know, I've come to believe that the most profound creativity emanates from a very deep place.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has explained it yet, but it's inside the vortex. It's a mystery. And I got news for all the time I was in show business and all of the time, it's bound up with all kinds of demons. There's all kinds of demons. And if you really, sometimes you see them, sometimes you don't. But if you see the demons in the person, but you also see the gifts.
Yeah.
Then you can start to accept the whole truth about a person in some way. But if you are constantly outside the vortex criticizing them and saying how bad they are, and I mean, you know, it's like Tiger Woods is like, I mean, my God, you'd think the man murdered a nation the way they're carrying on about him.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Right.
Well, isn't that right? I mean, it's like, come on. I mean, I'm going, it's his business. It's his business and, of course, his wife's business, right?
So what I love about all that is that they call it an illness. And I'm thinking, honey, you know. I mean, it's been going on for centuries. You know, it's not a disease.
Yeah, I
he
think
messed up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he messed up. That's all. A lot
I think
of time.
I think that the obsessiveness of the discipline of training from the time you're, and I know about this one, if you're training to be a tennis player, a dancer, a golf player, if you're training on the level of what, you know, his father and let's say Andre Agassi's father, there it is so linear. It is so tight, you know. You're only praised for, you know, the golf ball and getting the ball in the hole, and you're only praised that, and that is so narrow.
Well, it is an all work and no play thing. It goes back to old-timey common sense.
Yeah, and
you know?
Yeah.
It really does.
And something has to give.
Life. You have to live a balanced life.
And something has to give.
And,
you know, something gave. And we're talking about Tiger Woods, who's another Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
He has Saturn in Leo and the Sun in Capricorn. It's an intercepted thing. Saturn in Leo is the father. And, of course, you know, this whole thing, I love you if you, I love you. And, you know, it's still the father. They even have this commercial about, you know, okay, you know, I forgive you, Tiger, or whatever. But come on.
Yes.
And then they're saying, well, he'll never play golf the way he did before. Yes, he will. Yes, he will play golf the way he played before. Mark my words. Right now.
Well,
I'd
like to know why he wouldn't. I mean, my goodness, he certainly has the potential since he did before.
Kate hits it almost as good as he does, Sheila.
What, Joan? I didn't hear you, honey.
I said Kate hits it almost as good as he does. You ought to see Kate swing a golf club.
I completely ruined my forearm on that one.
You didn't know.
That's not the way
play,
to tell the story, Kate.
You did not know she could play, did you?
I think that Kate can do just about anything.
And that's a fact.
I'm a firm believer in that Kate can do anything, okay?
True. And by the way, my husband's a Capricorn.
Ah.
That would be interesting. And a golfer.
Oh, yeah. He is one of the most amazing people in the world. I think we should do his chart.
Okay, we'll do his chart.
Yes.
I think that the Capricorn sign means that you can pull from the ancient brain of other lifetimes.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times Capricorns are, Joanne's husband here was a Capricorn. I mean, he could carve wood. He was, a Presbyterian minister. He could carve wood. He could sing. He could, Lucio Ball was a Capricorn.
Yeah.
Whitey Adams has this capacity to everything that comes out of his mouth, he's never said in quite the same way before. And it's all totally original.
And he's more like Lucille Ball, I think.
Yeah, I think he's a comedian. Yeah, he's a total total comedian.
What did you say, Kate?
He's very funny. He's very funny. I don't know. I just lost it, Sheila. I can't help myself.
What, dear? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
I missed it. I can't believe I missed something. Now.
Well, she said the F word.
No.
Wouldn't want you to miss it, Joan.
I know. I have to know what's happening.
You know, I just have to tell a story here. I was doing a big workshop on last week or the week before. I don't know. Anyway, it was for an anniversary of a studio, a museum studio, and I was doing all these people's chart. And I had gone to Disney World, I told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had brought home a hat, a Disney hat, the one that he wears in The Sorcerer's Apprentice, that big blue hat.
Sure.
But
yeah.
it lit up, okay. Well, it wouldn't light. It didn't light. And my son tried to solder it, and he said, this is just, it doesn't work. So, you can buy anything from Disney, but if you want to send something back, that's another story. So she's on, and finally she gets them, and they tell her to send it to this address. Now it's 3 weeks, okay? 3 weeks. And I said, I'm doing my workshop this afternoon, and the hat's not here. And, now the minister gets on the phone. Now, she's spelling her name. G is in glass. L is in last. The third time, glass, the third time she said A is in ass. I mean, she was really getting madder and madder. This is 20 minutes. 20 minutes. She said, I ordered a hat. I didn't get it. So she called the reservation counter of the hotel we stayed at finally. And the reservation, she said, do you have a number there in one of those books that tells you to get a hold of the return department? This is 20 minutes. So finally 20 minutes. And I want to say the word, the F word was coming out, Kate.
Yeah, well, this is making me feel better. Tell Joanne, this is making me feel better that I actually left. And
yeah, she's saying these fucking, I'm saying Joanne, So all this goes on for 20 minutes, okay? So she gets a sweet, have a magical day in the magical kingdom person. And she said it was delivered this morning. It's at your front door.
Oh.
So Joanne gets up very quietly from the computer and the phone and goes down the steps to the front door and opens the door, and there's the hat.
And does it light up?
Oh, it lights up. And, I was doing this whole thing for this meeting of people, and the founder of the studio, it's Mulberry Art Studio, it's called, it's 25 years old, and I was doing, and Walt Disney was the center person that I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And here, a little voice that was sitting beside me, the woman that opened the studio, said, I was born on Walt Disney's birthday.
Oh.
Wow.
So you go, and I know her chart. I worked with her a lot. But, I was doing all these charts, and I didn't put it together, I hadn't put it together. I knew that they were both Sagges, but, I hadn't put it together. And you go, what is a synchronistic moment like that? It's a magical moment,
Yeah.
It's just a magical moment. And, I began in working with this whole vortex of love, knowing that you can be walking about Disney World with blisters on your feet, 110 degrees, and you stand in front of that damn castle, and you're in there saying, just give us your wish or your dream. And sure enough, you're saying it. And all these kids are dressed up, in their costumes, and you're in the center of love.
Yeah.
I mean, you are in the center of love, and your feet don't start to hurt till you get back on the tram.
Right. That's the most amazing thing in the world.
Yes, and
you
keep
going.
Joan,
I cannot walk around the block, but I'll guarantee you I could walk that Disney park.
Yeah.
Oh, really? The energy there must be fantastic.
It's
the energy.
It's so uplifting. It's just uplifting.
Yeah.
And talk about, and Joan, you know, her daughter worked there. These children and even the older people that run that park, they are just, you know, fake it till you make it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They are so gracious and so sweet and so always smiling. And because all that energy is constantly in that vortex, you get that feeling of love.
Right.
All the time. And you can feel when you step out of the park, you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that is such a great example of being in the vortex and out of it.
You
know, you
almost believe you could fly.
Yes. And you probably can, Joan.
Uh-huh. Well, I do understand children that get so excited there because I'm like an idiot.
Well,
I mean, I'm 6 years old. I have no sense in that park.
Well, there is no sense to have. Sense is the ridiculous thing to have.
Right. It's
because
just totally
kids,
a make-believe world.
Yes, and kids are just so innocent, and they're so in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like children and things that have fur and things that fly, of course, you know.
Right.
They're never outside the vortex. That's why, you know, Melissa's and Ulysses and all, you know, it's a constant love thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with a woman in Harrisburg that had to put her cat down. And it was tragic, you know. And I don't know if you saw that fireball in the sky 2 weeks ago.
No, did you?
There was this big fireball that a lot of people saw. They were calling and everything. But here she was holding this cat, Hazel, in her arms, and this fireball went off. And she said, I looked down at Hazel. And then she said, and Hazel is going to the bathroom all over the house. And I said, Ginger, she's pissing all over the universe. She wants out of here. Don't you get it?
She's had enough.
You know, she's had enough, and big tears, and I don't want to kill her. Well, when you start that language, you're really in deep, you know. You're in deep doo-doo. I said, take that language out. She is ready to go. So she did it. She brought the vet to her house and sat out on the deck, and she said it was like a very high holy moment, you know. And I think her heart opened. Joanne had hugged her, and Joanne said, I could feel her heart was closed. And it was interesting. We got a phone call about 2 days later, and she put the cat down, and she said, you know, my heart was closed. Joanne didn't say that to her, but this cat had given her the gift of that,
mm-hmm.
of knowing that she was closed off. And she, again, kept putting it back onto, you know, the childhood trauma, the childhood incest, all of that. Man, if you live with that, then you're bringing it into the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that can, the only way you can clear things up is in the vibration of the moment, you know?
True.
Because it will show up. It shows up over and over again until you clear it up. Gosh.
Yeah. But everything does. I think I've told you about my friend who was in her 90s and called me over there one day, and she had just realized she had pretty hands. Did I tell you this?
Oh, my God.
No.
She said a second-grade friend in the second grade,
mm-hmm.
a little girl had refused to hold her hand in a circle for a game and told her she had ugly hands. And she said, I have believed that my entire life until today.
My heaven.
And she was in her 90s. She said, I got to thinking of all the meals I've cooked. And she was a beautiful pianist and organist and that kind of thing. And all the weddings I've played for and all the funerals I've played for. And she said, I looked at my hands and she said, my hands are beautiful.
Right.
Wow.
Well, you can see how a thought pattern of a basic belief gets into your whole.
Little children believe that stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, we take on those little remarks that don't mean anything, and we believe it. I was talking to a friend the other night who was complaining about her nose. Now,
mm-hmm.
What is wrong with your nose? You know, why don't you go to a doctor and have him measure, and he will tell you you're in perfect proportion. There's nothing wrong with your nose. Oh, well, I was always told as a child that my nose takes over my face. I said, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well,
and
I would
not
tell her,
flattering. You
tell
know?
Her, go get a picture of Barbara Streisand and see what she did with her
measure
nose.
Measure it, right. But my gosh, you know, I mean, but we buy all these little things as little children, and we don't let them go. And they don't fit anymore. We don't need that rule anymore. We don't need that belief anymore, and we hold on to it all of our lives.
Yeah.
We should look through our lives. We should look through our lives to see what was said to us that we haven't let go of yet.
Right. You read the book that Peggy Shealy wrote, or you read part of it. But
yes.
Peggy Shealy always told me, she said, Joan, you make peace with all your stuff now. Because if you don't, you're going to have to do the work later. And she said, you may be in a nursing home somewhere when you're making peace with all these crazy things that you believe that don't make any sense anymore.
Or you make them back in another life, Joan.
Oh, God, I hope not. Oh,
and have to work on them then, right?
I have worked so hard to get rid of all that stuff. But we do, you know, we all do it. We all do it, and we have all these false beliefs about ourselves, you know, and we've just bought it, hook, line, and sinker.
Well, it's good to do a focus wheel at night. And a focus wheel, I find, it's good to always go to sleep on the focus wheel of what you have gratitude for, what you're thankful for. You know, is this true? Is this absolutely true? How does it make me feel when I think that? And get inside the vortex of who you are and the belief and love of yourself before you ever go to sleep. And then you wake up like that.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, you wake.
I don't know anything about that.
Then you wake up. Because if you go to sleep with any kind of attack and defend, cause and effect, outside the vortex stuff, then you wake up like that. So it's good to go, I'm going to line myself up, and I'm not going to go to sleep until I'm lined up with the belief that I'm wonderful and I'm all that I can be and all of the good things about everybody else around you. And if you're in conflict with somebody, find something good about them. Everybody has something.
True.
Right.
I do believe that. I have done that one.
Yeah, everybody has.
I put it that way, but I like it.
Yeah, well,
I'll try that tonight.
I was going to say, to get to sleep with those vibrations is just the best thing you can do for yourself.
I've done gratitude.
Yeah.
I haven't ever done it just quite like what you're saying, where you're just going through the where you are in belief state at that moment, right?
Yes, you
and releasing the ones that aren't true and taking on the ones that are.
And nine times out of ten, the ones that are making you miserable are not true.
Right.
Just the way you're telling the story.
Right. Kate, you do one that's very similar. You call it the work, but it's very similar to that, right?
Yeah, that's Brian Katie.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it's Brian Katie. That's the work, and the work works. Right, Kate?
Oh, it does. It really does. Oh, my gosh.
Just keep educating me. I'm learning.
And what's your name? Janine Roth, who wrote Women of Food and God. That's the same premise, that book. It's the work. It really is. She just has a different swing on it, but it's the same work. You know, belief system are just, you know, I think a belief system that really keeps you in pain is just clogged up thoughts that, you know, basically, you know, it's and it will repeat itself. And if it's not what you go, how's this working for you? Well, it's not. So then let's do something different, right?
And an end-of-the-day review is a perfect way to get all that together.
And I like that.
However way you do it, you know, it doesn't have to be what Sheila just said. It can just be looking back, review, end-of-the-day review, and just kind of heal and forgive it all before you go to sleep.
Yes.
And you're looking for the false beliefs in it, right?
Yes.
That would be good, yeah.
Well, just like the hands.
Right.
That was a false belief that was put in there.
Right.
They were beautiful hands that did beautiful things.
Yes.
And to suffer with that for a lifetime.
That's what, We have come to the end of our program.
Oh, dear.
Okay, my last sentence is this is what I'm working on this week. A dream is just a dream. A goal is a dream with a plan and an outcome.
Oh.
Okay.
That's my thought for my monthly show.
Well, thank you so much.
You're
okay,
always
and would you put your husband's information, either you or Kate, on our computer?
We will do our best.
What's his name, Whitey?
Yeah.
Whitey Adams.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, I love everybody.
I love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
You're delightful. Thank you.